All right, happy new year, and welcome back to Pursuit of Profit. As we close out 2025, I want to start today's episode with a quick moment of gratitude, because this year has been nothing short of incredible, and it's all because of listeners and viewers like you. This year alone, according to the 2025 Spotify Wrapped Report, the show saw a 1,000% increase in new listeners, 999% to be exact, a 170% increase in new followers, and a 62% increase in listening time. On the video side, Pursuit of Profit ranked in the top 25% of all video podcasts on Spotify. And Spotify also recognized the show with three unique awards: the 2025 Marathon Show, the 2025 Most Talked About Show, and a 2025 Most Shared Show. Those numbers don't happen without an engaged, loyal audience, and I'm incredibly grateful for every listen, share, message, and conversation sparked by this show. So for New Year's, we're bringing you a holiday encore and one of our most downloaded episodes and talked about episodes of the year, our conversation with Houston Barnes of Barnes Law that originally aired on May 28th. So from my family to yours, we wish you a very happy, healthy, and wealthy New Year. Now let's revisit one of the standout conversations of 2025. Here's Houston Barnes of Barnes Law.
You can send me Widget Inc. And I can tell you, as soon as I know that you're working with Widget Inc., that I know right off the bat, they're going to take these three things. That's going to add value to my client. And your cousin, John, who is a general practitioner attorney, he may be great at what he does. But the fact of the matter is he just doesn't have 800 FDDs under his belt.
All right. Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Today, we're diving into the legal backbone of every franchise deal, the Franchise Disclosure Document, or FDD. Joining me today is franchise attorney Houston Barnes. He's a seasoned expert who's helped countless entrepreneurs navigate the fine print that can make or break your franchise investment. We'll be breaking down his new book, Franchise Law Decoded, and exploring why investing a few thousand dollars in a qualified franchise attorney can save you from making some costly mistakes. Houston shares why most disputes stem from simple misunderstandings or misaligned expectations and how to avoid them. He'll also unpack what's negotiable, what's not, and how to spot red flags before you sign. If you're evaluating a franchise opportunity, this is a conversation you don't want to miss. Thank you, and let's get into it. I appreciate you taking the time out to join us on the show.
Of course.
Yeah, no, I know you do a lot with my business partner, Justin Guevara, at Phrenosity. So we really do appreciate you over the years. You've helped us tremendously over the years with clients and giving them advice. The other thing I like about you and your firm is I like that you chose a side, right? I don't like firms that want to represent franchisors and then conveniently represent the franchisee. I like that you chose a position. You picked a team. I am going to represent the franchisee. And I love that about you. So I just want to put that out. It's very important distinction in franchise law. Who are you? Do you litigate? Are you just doing administrative function?
Yep.
Do you represent franchisors and franchisees? Because of course, if I asked you a question about predatory tactics in an FDD, and yet your firm represents both sides of the aisle, you're not going to give me the answer. Because one minute you're drafting an FDD and the next minute you're litigating one. So I don't like that. I do want to understand though, why franchise law? Of all the things you could have done, intellectual property, trademarks, divorce, why franchising?
Early on in my career, I had an opportunity to do a lot of entrepreneurial work. I was working with startups. I was working with folks raising money, early stage companies. Again, just that entrepreneurial spirit when that was all real fresh and new. And in my career, I had the opportunity, some people came to me and on both sides, right? Some people wanted to buy into a franchise system, asked me to review their documents. I had some folks who had started businesses that were real successful and they wanted to franchise them. And so I got exposure to both of those and realized that it was a niche market that I really enjoyed. And the reason I got into entrepreneurship was not for the business side of things. It was not for the contracts. It was not for the minutia of that. It was for the people. It was for the people who wanted to make a better life for themselves. It was the people who didn't want to work for someone else, but wanted to be their own boss and wanted to figure out a path forward. And, you know, entrepreneurship, starting companies is really, really hard, has a high failure rate. Franchising, I don't use the word shortcut, but franchising is kind of a life hack in that you get to start your own business. You get to be your own boss. You get to forge into that world, but you still have a support system with you, right? So you have something that's really unique in entrepreneurship. So the people that I deal with on a day in and day out basis, franchisor attorneys, God bless them. They're intelligent. They have to be on top of every aspect of every state law that's gone through, and they have to just really focus in on their clients. Whereas every single day, I get to have multiple conversations with entrepreneurs, with young people, with old people, with people in transition. And it's just an energy and excitement that I don't think a lot of attorneys get, right? And I'm not an academic attorney that wants to sit and read all day and want to be on that side. I want to be interfacing my clients. I want to be helping them grow, and I want to be part of an ecosystem. And I'm not sure there's anything that rivals franchising when it comes to that.
Well said. Love it. I am amazed over my career. I've been self-employed pretty much my entire life. And I am amazed at how many people do deals and then trouble comes. And I'll ask them, did you have a lawyer review that? No, man, you know, we didn't want to spend the money. And then I'll ask another guy who's getting annihilated on a commercial lease. Did you ever get an attorney to help you with that? No, we did that ourselves. Or my cousin's brother's neighbor does real estate transactions and they helped him buy their house. So he looked at it. We got to demystify this nonsense. What is your advice? I cannot put enough emphasis that every client of ours should hire counsel to review legal documents, right? And counsel that specializes in the area in which you're investing. What are your feelings? Why should someone in franchising hire a franchise attorney?
So, first of all, when you're getting into franchising, depending on the franchise you're getting into, I mean, you have everything from service to large medical or restaurant build outs that may be upfront of $1 million, right? Or you may be doing some service where you're spending $30,000-$40,000. There are all sorts of models here. But either way, you're getting into this and you, over the next 10 years of your life, are going to be making a multi-million dollar investment. You're going to hopefully have millions of dollars coming in, going out. This is a major transaction. To spend $2,000-$3,000 on the front end to protect yourself, I mean, that's a drop in the bucket and is going to add so much security and so much safety and so much comfort that it's really a no-brainer cost in, cost out type deal. At least once a week, I get a call from somebody who reaches out to me and they have a huge problem with their franchise. One of the first questions I ask, and I don't recognize the name, and I say, we didn't work together, right? And they say, no, I didn't hire an attorney and I wish I had. And every time I just want to say, hey, can I hit record? Because the story you're telling me, I wish you could be my advertisement, because you are now going to a litigator. I don't do litigation. I help people get into franchising. So I'm going to send you to a litigator where for a few thousand dollars, I could have avoided your issue up front. You're now going to spend $10,000-$15,000 with a litigator just to get through the first few steps of how can we get out of this. Best case scenario, it ends there. Worst case scenario, the guy who called me earlier this week got into franchising a few months ago, and he was out $120,000 for a simple little thing that I talked to all my clients about, and I just wish he had talked to me. Franchising is both complicated and very simple. Say what you want about big government. One thing that our government has decided to do in its wisdom is create a franchise disclosure document. And what they have said is that anybody who gets into franchising has to be presented with this document. And if your viewers haven't or your listeners haven't seen one, I encourage you to talk to your consultant or the franchise brand that you're looking at and get one in your hand. And depending on your brand, it could be 100 pages. It could be 400 pages. And it is a monstrosity. And then the government requires the franchisor to put it into layman's terms. My job is to take plain English and put it into conversational plain English between you and me. So I make sure you understand it. But when I say franchising is complicated, because you are getting a 400-page document, all these disclosures. And every day I have a call and I say to my potential client or client, hey, did you read the FDD? And they laugh and they say, I tried to, I fell asleep, or I was just overwhelmed by it. Well, that's why I'm here, because I want to make it simple. Every franchise has to disclose the same things. Whether you're looking at McDonald's, where you're making a $40 million investment to buy a whole area, or whether you're looking at a pet waste disposal business, where you're going to be picking up dog waste in your neighborhood with a single unit, both of those are giving you the same information. My job is to go through, and I see hundreds of these a year. I've seen thousands of franchise disclosure documents, and I can pick out what's valuable, what's not valuable. You get your cousin, you get your general business attorney, you get the same attorney that handled your running a stop sign last week. Maybe they've seen another franchise disclosure document, probably not, but they're going to look at that monstrosity and have a hard time parsing out what's negotiable in here, what's not negotiable. Is this standard? That looks high. All the time I get clients coming to me who just say, hey, I had this other attorney look at it and here's what they said. And I just say, no, that's not the case. The past 200 deals I've done have had this clause in there, or the past 100 deals I've done have had this clause in there, but there is some flexibility on that. It's real important if you're going to work with an attorney as a franchisee or potential franchisee, work with someone who knows what they're doing. If I get a traffic ticket, I'm going to the best traffic ticket in town. It's just like your doctors. If I have a heart issue, I'm going to a cardiologist, a podiatrist.
Absolutely. Completely agree with you. If your phone rang right now, once a week, you mentioned, what is the number one issue you're dealing with on the other end of that phone? What are you hearing repeatedly as, let's say, a misdeed of a franchisor, or the problem that you're repeatedly hearing?
The lawyer's softer answer is one of the reasons I love my job, is that every client is different. I had a client last week who was getting into an oil change business. He was also a Pepsi distributor. So we had to negotiate the contract such that he could give free Pepsis away to his customers, right? Never seen that before. We'll never see that again, I guarantee you. So that's what I love about this business, is everyone's different. And every conversation I have, I get to draw out what's unique about them. To your question, to answer it more specifically and more generally, almost every call that I get from a franchisee who's having a problem with their franchisor, the problem is missed expectations. They thought they were going to get something, and the franchisor had presented something else, and those expectations weren't met, whatever they were. And that person didn't read, didn't understand the franchise agreement. I mean, part of my job is to say, hey, client, what have they promised you as far as ongoing support? Because you'll get a call and they'll say, hey, I only talk to the franchisor. I mean, I call them and they're not always available. They're not there every day to hold my hand. They're not walking me through every decision. And I say, well, did they promise you that they'd be on a 30-minute call every day? And they say, well, no, but that's just what I expected. And for that client, that was their expectation. And so that was never fully fleshed out. And that wasn't in the agreement. Or the opposite. The franchisor wants to be too involved in these certain decision making, where I thought I would have complete freedom to do X, Y, Z. And so I say to them, well, no, I mean, we're working within what's in the agreement. Sometimes people do reach deals with the franchisor where the franchisor says, hey, first 3 months, I'll spend an hour with you every day. Sometimes the franchisor does say, hey, marketing wise, go wild, go do whatever you want. I trust you with your background, but that's not normal. And if you haven't had that conversation and haven't memorialized it in writing, I mean, franchising is no different than marriage. It's no different than friendship. It's no different than any other interaction we have in life. That the number one problem that we as humans face, I believe, is lack of clear communications and expectations that aren't adequately met. And as a lawyer, two people can say things and high five and think they're in agreement. And when we put those words down in writing, both sides will say, whoa, whoa, that's not exactly what I said. So let's get that clear now. So you're not making a call. I have current clients who run into issues with franchisors as well, but it is never because they did not understand what they were getting into.
Excellent. Love it. You've heard from some incredible franchise brands right here on the podcast. If you're sitting there wondering which opportunity might be the right fit for you, we're here to help. At Franosity, we offer free consulting services to aspiring small business owners just like you. We'll guide you through a focused, strategic process to help you identify the best franchise match. Call or text us at 561-277-3710 or visit us on the web at franosity.com. That's franosity.com. We look forward to working with you. Franchisor expectations, franchisee expectations, and so on. That is very, very true. And of course, they use all these fancy words of how they're going to go after them. Fraud, you didn't deliver on support. And they drop all these huge allegations when in reality, it's really just a misunderstanding of, I thought you were going to be there every day, 30 minutes a day. Meanwhile, no one ever made that representation. Like no one ever made it. It was an assumption. I thought you said I was in business for myself, but not by myself. Therefore, you should be there when I call you. So that was excellent. I appreciate that. Another thing that I've experienced in this business is someone will hire an attorney. They'll review the agreement. They will redline the shit out of it. Okay. They'll come back with like 50 comments, including like striking through royalties, striking through PGs. Right. And then I say to them like, whoa, what? I thought we made it pretty clear. You needed to hire a franchise attorney. They go, well, the guy said he specialized in franchising. There's absolutely no way that that person specialized in franchising. Then they give that same document to someone like you and you come back with this document is ordinary and customary. How do you go from a lawyer saying, run for the high hills, this thing needs to be redlined, to this document is maybe fairly written?
So there's a push and pull when you enter into business relationship. Early on in my career, I was doing M&A work. I was working with small businesses. And that's what you do. You redline the heck out of a document. You want, as your, whatever side you're representing, you want them to get the best deal possible. Right. And so you redline and you negotiate. As a franchisor, let's say you're going to have 250 locations. You don't want 250 agreements, right? You want every person to sign the exact same one. And what my job is to strike that balance. There are some franchisors that absolutely every single franchisee signs the same agreement, and that's fine. 30-40% of my clients, we do what's called an addendum. So every contract in that system is the same, but some of those people are going to have addendums on more minor points because again, we're all humans. We're all different, getting in different situations. When someone comes in and they've completely just redlined something and they say, the only way this works, if I change this, I change that, I change this, that's not franchising, right? And a client will come and say, hey, they're not willing to change anything. And that's a big red flag to me. And I'll say, okay, you know, it's a big red flag to me is if they're willing to change a lot.
Good for you.
Because if they're going to change a lot for you, you know what? They're going to change a lot for that person a town over. And they're going to change a lot for the person a state over. And if you're making a lot of changes to something, the idea with the franchise is when you go into a McDonald's in Des Moines, and you go into McDonald's in downtown Miami, you're getting the same hamburger, you're getting the same fries, you're getting the same service. And that's how franchising works. And so you want your business to operate the same as these other, and you want them to operate the same as you. And that has a lot of advantages, right? You have one, the franchisor is able to control the system better. You're able to know what bounds you work in, which is a lot of freedom in business. When you're running your own business and you're completely alone, every decision you make could be right, could be wrong, could be somewhere on the spectrum. You don't know if you're right or wrong. You have no guardrails. It can be horribly overwhelming. So to have that support with you can be really comforting. let's go back to the last topic of people calling and saying they're having an issue. The first question I ask when a current client calls and says, hey, here's the problem I'm having with the franchisor, the first question I ask is say, have you talked to the other franchisees? Have you talked to other folks in the system? And almost always they say no. And I say, if you're having a problem, the great thing about being in a system with 100 other franchisees is you're probably not the only person having that issue. If you're having complaints from a customer or you're having a problem with the franchisor, it's highly unlikely that there's anything special about you. We're all special. I get it. But on the other hand, you're not special. You're part of a team here. And if you're having a problem, talk to the other franchisees. I guarantee you other people are having that problem. And if five or six franchisees come to the franchisor and say, hey, you know, we're really not happy with this way you're doing this aspect of marketing, that's much more powerful than just random franchisee in random city saying, I don't like it. Well, I'm sorry you don't like it. You get a team of you coming up, you know, they're going to listen to that more. But it's not only the issues, it's the successes as well, right? I mean, you have a franchisee and once, I'm trying to be as vague as possible because I deal with every right. industry. I mean, restaurants and pet waste disposal and IV drip bars and you name it, it's out there. But if somebody finds a hook that's really working in Des Moines, you know what? People shopping in Des Moines are not that different than Miami, and you probably can piggyback off that success as well. And what's the old saying? A lifting seas, all
rising tide raises all ships. Deal. Love that.
There you go. So to circle back to your question, having that uniformity with a franchise agreement across all franchisees is much more beneficial than a franchisor that's willing to just make changes carte blanche. That being said, my personal approach is that there are some areas in franchise agreements where franchises are unique and there may need to be some tweaks. Let's do an addendum. Let's keep it within industry standards. Let's not do anything that's going to upset the entire system, but that adds value not only to the franchisee, but to the franchisor to make this the best long-term relationship. That's where that soft touch kind of magic of the law comes in is figuring out where that is. And sometimes just saying no, just saying, hey, you know what? I understand where you're coming from, but that's just not industry standard. Here's what is industry standard. And here's why that's industry standard.
Do you have, I know it's a loaded question. I get it. I have found with franchise attorneys is that a firm or maybe someone that is reviewing documents for us, they have their shtick, I'll call it, meaning they don't like to see spousal acknowledgement or the spouse being involved in the deal when the spouse has nothing to do with the deal. They don't like, let's say, on the resale, on a transfer, that the seller is liable if the new buyer doesn't pay royalties. There's like certain things that I've noticed as a law firm goes through a document. I don't let my client sign that. I'm going, do you have your list? Like, I look for these red flags and I refuse to allow my clients to sign these things. I think they're overreaching.
I take a different approach. When a client comes to me to review, especially if they've been working with a consultant, they've worked with a Zor, they want to get into franchising, right? I have done thousands of these reviews, thousands of these negotiations. So I know what's negotiable and I know what's not. And none of these for me is a showstopper. If I have a client deal, you can only lead a horse to water, right? So my job is to point out red flags, point out issues, point out any areas that may be concerning to me. And if I have those, I'm not going to do a hard stop. I'm not going to tell them what to do. I'm going to open up a conversation with that, right? And if it's problematic for me, and it's not problematic for them, all I can say is, hey, here's potentially something you could do. And they say, no, you know, I'm okay with that. Well, then look, I'm here to serve you. On the other hand, people come to me all the time, like the Pepsi guy, and say, hey, there's nothing in here that says I can give free Pepsis to clients. I say, well, of course I didn't call that out in my notes because that's crazy, Bill. But let's build that in. Right. Right? What I thought you were getting at, which I think is more important, which is where the value of an experienced franchise attorney comes in, is you have franchise firms like you discussed who have their red flags. they have their buttons, right? I do a few hundred of these every year, but they are not all different. There are some franchises that I see multiple times, and you can send me Widget Inc. And I can tell you, as soon as I know that you're working with Widget Inc., I know that they're going to be flexible on territory.
Okay.
Because I've done 3 or 4 deals with them. Or I know that if you even mention spousal guarantee, they're going to get kind of angry because they had a real bad experience with spousal guarantee in the past. So I think it's a disservice if a firm or a person comes in with a guide set of, if I see this, I'm going to be a hard no. What I think is more valuable is that list of starters, non-starters, to know where they are in the industry. Because there's something in the industry, changing royalty, for example, that's a non-starter. If a franchise has a 7% royalty, everyone's paying that 7% royalty, right? But you, again, you send me Widget Inc. and you're concerned about XYZ. Every deal I've done with Widget Inc., I've done an addendum, and we have put these 3 points in there. And there are some franchises like that, that I've done enough deals with that I know right off the bat, they're going to take these 3 things. That's going to add value to my client. So knowing those lists is where the value comes in. And your cousin, John, who is a general practitioner attorney, he may be great at what he does, but the fact of the matter is he just doesn't have 800 FDDs under his belt to know what that looks like, right? And experience matters. I have a 15-year-old son who I'm teaching to drive right now. He knows all the rules. He's the smartest kid I know. He knows everything. He just doesn't have the experience. He hasn't been on the road, and there's nothing that I can tell him. It is just time on the road of him learning these situations. And that's what a great franchise attorney has. That's what a great cardiologist attorney has. That's what a great traffic attorney has, is they know when they go into court, that judge is going to automatically cut it down or not, or they need to be funny or mean or whatever.
That's right. You always want the lawyer that knows the judge, right? I know this guy and he likes me.
Exactly. Right?
It's like, do you know the judge on this case? Yes. 25-year history, him or her, right? You see it in the movies all the time. You see it in real life all the time. I agree with you. It's like, listen, I'm not first time this rodeo. I know this landscape. I know these brands. I've reviewed thousands of documents. I know what's normal. I know what's overreaching. I know where they're flexible. I know where they're a deal breaker. Absolutely not going to waste my time. Let's get some wins, right? Let's get some of these things approved and then we can reach. I like that a lot.
Exactly.
In an FDD, 23 parts, item 1, item 23. I know that each one is important. Do you spend a little more time on certain areas? Let me tee it up with my own experience. I'll have a client that'd be like, look, I'm looking at this brand, brick and mortar med spa. That's the industry. You got it now. Brick and mortar med spa. Okay. What does it say for cash? Oh, it says 30 grand. So it's suggesting that you only have 30 grand for a 2,500 square foot brick and mortar med spa. Your rent is probably 7,000-8,000 a month. I find franchisors underestimate cash reserves for 3 months, my opinion. I don't know what your thoughts are, but I feel like a lot of people get involved in these brands and they're like, oh, no, it's $350. No, it's not. By the time you break even, you will be out of pocket over 400 grand minimum, like your true cost basis. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you look at? Or no, that as a lawyer, that's not on my radar. What are your thoughts on that statement?
Let me start with the lawyer answer. And to whoever's watching or listening, I'm not your lawyer, but every word in there is important. That the franchise agreement and franchise disclosure document was not written with more things important than others. So everything's important. Don't skip over everything. So for those watching or listening, there are 23 items in a franchise disclosure document, and they're all standardized. The number one area that I find franchisees have spent time with is item 19. And for those watching and listening out there, item 19 is what's called financial performance representations. And that is where you can look at and see how much money you might make, how much money this is going to bring in, what the margins are, those sorts of things. So that is the number one area that people look at because they want to know how much money they're going to make. So that's the number one place they go. Item 19 is possibly the least important to me. right? Because there's nothing legal about item 19. Okay. When you're looking at franchising, you're going to get multiple franchise disclosure documents in front of you, and you're going to compare the item 19 to figure out where you can make the most money that aligns with what your goals are and your objectives and where you want to be. So that's just numbers. And I'm not a CPA. I'm not a business advisor. I want you to figure out what industry works best for you. Again, I have people who want to spend their day doing pet waste disposal. I bring that up multiple times. Who want to spend their day walking yards, being outside doing pet waste disposal. That's awesome, right? I have people who want to spend their time in a dark room with a CPA franchise, looking at a computer, not interacting with humans. Completely right. Different. One's not better or worse than the other. It's for the different people. So almost everything else, when you look at an FDD, that's where the legal stuff comes in. And I want to go through it all and make sure you understand everything. So yeah, you look at item 5 is initial fees. Item 6 is other fees. It's important. I want you to understand what you're getting into that. Do you understand what those are? Are those industry standard, right? Item 15 is your obligation to participate in the business. Are you going to be there every day or are you going to be absentee? That's important. Item 16, what the franchise may sell. Some people want to get into a business where they sell 10 items and they want to bring in a bunch of outside items. And that sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. So I want to go through all those. The only area, and it's interesting because it's the area you bring up, the only area that I will look at and say, this may be wrong, or you need to take this with a real big grain of salt, is the estimated initial investment, which is item 7. And the biggest thing I'm finding with that is cash reserves, it's those sorts of things, but it's more the environment in which we live right now. We have tariffs, we have labor shortages, we have some areas that have so much commercial real estate that they're out of control. Some places have no commercial real estate. 9 times out of 10, if I hear from a client that there's anything going wrong in the first 6 months, it's that construction is costing them more than they thought and it's taking longer than they thought, right? And I sometimes get clients who come to me and they look at item 7 and it says, and I'm making this up, it says a franchise initial investment is going to be between $75,000 and $150,000. And my client says, I'm the greatest thing that's ever happened to business. I know what I'm doing. I'm the smartest person ever. And I'm going to, says 50, I'm probably going to keep it in the 40s, but at least it'll be 50. And I say, maybe, I don't know you. That's great. Budget for 150.
That's right.
Budget a little higher than that, because I don't want you coming back to me and saying, oh my God, it's 150. I wasn't prepared for that. Says it right there, my friend. But even more than that, 20, 25% more than whatever that initial investment is. It's not uncommon to see that right now, just because, especially with a brick and mortar business, there's so many variables that are going into design, build, and timing as well, right? I mean, everyone has the best expectations that they're going to get something done in the next 6 months and 6 days, 6 weeks. And I mean, you can see it starting in deadlines in middle school all the way through mature businesses. If you give someone a deadline, they're going to typically do most of the work in the last 5% of the time.
Absolutely.
Allotted, right?
Totally agree. Yep.
So the whole FDD is important. Yep. From a lawyer's perspective, the dollar signs are least important to me because that's not where I am. I want to make sure that you understand all the sections. I want you to understand all the terms that you're getting into. And if you don't, and figure out where there may be play in those and all that, and make sure you're comfortable with those. And then if there's one area that I do every call say, hey, just FYI, keep this in mind. It is timing might take a little bit longer. Costs are going to be on the high end. Make sure that you can handle that.
Good advice. I like that. We're running out of time here. This is really like a 3-part series to deal with this topic, right? Especially if you wanted to get granular and you actually wanted to explain to the audience, you know, the items and the importance of each item, it would take a couple of hours minimum, few hours even, with all the parts. I'm talking about the 3 parts, the actual franchise agreement, the exhibits.
We could just as easily do a whole hour just on the history of what a franchise disclosure document is and how it came to be, as we could spend an hour on any single item within the franchise disclosure document, right? Any part of that, I could tell you stories of where it went sideways,
right?
Because of this item and all that. But
I have so many more questions. Get the book. Reach out to Houston.
So first of all, let me couch that by if you're thinking about getting into franchising, if you're going down that path, it's never too early to reach out to me, right? My first consultation is always free. I work in this industry. It's never too early. Let's start that conversation. So don't be afraid. BarnesLaw.com. Google my name, Houston Barnes. Finding my cell phone and email address is scarily simple. For anyone else involved in franchising in any way, I think this book is valuable, right? If you're just thinking about franchising for the first time, this is going to give you a background of what a franchise disclosure document is. It's going to walk you through the sections, hopefully help you simplify and understand what a franchise disclosure document is, what you can do as you get into this industry, and where the legal side lies. Franchisors, consultants, people who have been doing this for years, the disclosure document is always hanging out there. Usually the consultants, even the franchisors, aren't reading their own stuff a lot and are not super familiar with the intricacies of it. And so when their clients, when their Zs ask them questions, they're not necessarily able to answer those. And I think reading this book and using that as a resource can help give them an overview where they can have an easier conversation with their clients as well. So that's really where I targeted it, as a big overview for the potential franchisee who doesn't know anything, that they can learn what they're getting into. But I also tried to put enough detail in there, whereas a consultant or a franchisor or somebody in the industry could pick it up, read it, get some valuable insights on how to communicate with their clients and really understand what's going on with the legal side of things. So it's targeted to all those people. Buy multiple copies on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, whatever the case is, reach out to me. I'm happy to send you a copy. But I think it's a valuable thing because every franchise has a franchise disclosure document. This touches every single person in franchising. This is going to be the Bible of the next 10, 20, 30 years of your life. You need to understand it. And there are people like me out there who can help you understand it, help you get through there. You're not the first person to go through it. You're not the last person. And we're here to help you. There's a lot of talk in the industry about the franchise family. A lot of us know each other and we just want you to be successful. We want each other to be successful. And there's nothing but love in this industry. So use all the resources you can and we're all there for each other, right?
That's great. I completely agree with you. You know what I want to ask you before you jump? When I first got in this business and I suggested that people hire an attorney, the first reaction is that clock's always ticking. We then found an attorney that did flat rate FDD reviews, and it was a game changer, honestly. People felt protected and they felt like, you know what, now I'm going to do it because the clock stopped. It never started. You just told me a number and the number was for you to review it. You spend 5 hours reviewing it, that's on you. How do you bill? Are you hourly or are you flat rate based on the project?
I am flat fee. I want our interests to be aligned. And my interest is not to bill you up. I charge every single client the same fee, right? And if they want me to review it, send their notes, and never talk to me again, they have paid that fee, right? And I have some clients who do that, who I review it, I send them my notes, I never hear from them again. And they have paid the same fee as a client who I send the notes, we then have an hour-long call. Then a week later, we do another hour. And then 3 weeks later, I'm talking to the franchisor. I invest a lot of time in that client. You know what? They pay flat fee.
Interesting.
Once they're engaged, if they have a question, if they have a problem, they're going to call, text, email me, and I'm going to respond. I'm not going to charge that fee. 100% of my income last year came from charging that single flat fee, and I never charged it twice to somebody. Sometimes people want a whole lot of interactions, and you know what? That's what I'm here for. Whatever you need, I want to be that resource for you.
Do you continue with the lease negotiation? Do you help with that? Or you're done? FDD, franchise agreement addendum, and then you refer out? Or will you help?
When it comes to lease negotiations, I find that you get the most value by going with someone local. So franchise attorney, you really need someone who understands the whole industry. With lease negotiations, there is so much value with somebody who knows the local market conditions, who knows the landlords, who knows the real estate agents, who knows what your current market is able to negotiate. Because what you're getting in downtown Manhattan and what you're getting in rural Montana, as far as a commercial lease space and what is completely different. And so some franchise attorney who also does lease negotiations, so they claim, I mean, they're not going to have that on the ground knowledge that is necessary for lease negotiations. So it really is, again, like working with your doctor. Come to me, I'm your cardiologist. When you have a different issue with your foot, you're going to go to your podiatrist.
Absolutely. Love it. Great answer. I appreciate it. Houston, can't thank you enough for coming on the show, taking the time out, spending it with us, and adding a ton of value to the audience. I greatly appreciate it.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss out on more great content. And if you're considering investing in a franchise, whether it's the brand you featured today or another opportunity, we're here to help. Visit us at franocity.com. That's FRANOCITY.com. We'd love to help you take that next step towards business ownership.